Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we have some exciting new business developments in our lives, which we'll announce next week. But Pipe, I want you to talk about a business development that's been in our lives for a while, and that's Dwell Bible, which, judging by the tone of our pre-show production meeting, is probably something we could all use this morning. Piper, tell us about Dwell.
Yeah, I think I need to go find their like Hope for a Weary Soul playlist or whatever it is.
Yeah, there we go.
Listeners, Dwell is an audio Bible app, and that doesn't quite do it justice because that makes it just sound like you just listen to the Bible straight through. It's kind of a full-featured, full-service audio Bible app with multiple different narrators. They have listening plans, so you can listen through the Bible over a particular period of time. They have kind of a pause and reflect, which is you listen, and then there's a period where you can just reflect on it. You can work on memorization. It's a great tool for kind of getting scripture into the parts of your life when reading is not a possibility, or if you're just not a big reader and listening is the way that you learn better. It's a great tool for that too. If you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can check them out. They have special discounts just for our listeners. There's a 10% discount off of their annual subscription and a 33% discount off the lifetime subscription. That's a $50 savings. So it's pretty significant. So if you're looking for a creative, pleasant way to get scripture into your life, Dwell is a great way to do it. Again, it's dwellapp.io/happyrant. Go check them out.
Solid work, Pipe. Baby, you just got back from Louisville, huh? That's pretty exciting.
Mm. Little harbor staff meeting.
Yeah, doing some wharf stuff, some harbor stuff.
Yeah, yeah, doing a lot of stuff with the ocean.
Oh, solid, dude.
You know, it's what we do.
Was it a fun trip for you? Exciting to go to Louisville?
It was fun. It was also exhausting. It was three solid days of planning and meeting and you know, having your head down and things and presenting things in boardrooms, and it was a lot of that stuff.
Baby, listen to
it. So some of it not super sweet spots for Ronnie Martin entirely, but the social aspect of it was great.
Listen to this, baby. When we go to Michigan in a couple of weeks, I'm staying on a boat. We Airbnb'd a boat.
Whoa.
Yeah, dude. So I get to live that wharf life.
You Airbnb like a houseboat on the lake?
Yeah, it's actually like a I don't know, like a good sized boat, and it's just like lashed into a harbor, and I don't know, we'll sleep there and like look at the
Maybe that's nice. I've actually seen that too. Yeah, you're not actually taking it.
Yeah,
out.
We're not actually like using it as it. We're just kind of like
it stays at the dock.
Yeah, it stays basically at the dock. So we've never done that before. So it'll be fun.
I have to say the boat owner who came up with that idea is a genius, because they just spent they spent like $1.3 million on this boat or whatever it was, and it just sits there for 345 days a year. Why not recoup some cost by just having a family 100%. Sleep in the, you know, and get to, you know, live that marina life fantasy that you're so keen on.
Dude, I'm so
keen
on
it. It's cool because when you go on Airbnb now like that pops up now. Like, hey, here's another option, a boat.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm into it.
It's like, okay.
I'll let you guys know how it goes, man. I'll have to do some...
Yeah, no, we need to get a full recon.
Oh, for sure. Report. I'll have to do some remote apps while I'm traveling, but we'll figure all that out, man. I don't want to bore people with the minutiae of how we make this show, you know.
Well, we don't want to lose the momentum.
I know, dude. I don't want to lose the huge energy that we've got this morning.
This forward.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it just makes you...
Especially this morning.
Yeah, it makes you grateful to do radio. You know, it's exciting. So,
it is.
Boy, speaking of radio, believe it or not, there are other people in the Christian space who do radio in the way that we do it.
No.
In that they make podcasts. And
to be fair, that's about all they have in common with the way we do it.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say...
That is correct.
I thought you were going to say, to be fair, that's all people. And I was like, yeah, that works too. You know, literally not unique or special anymore.
Every group of three white men makes a podcast, yeah.
Oh, dude, no kidding. Judas. speaking
Judas,
of,
we got to do a rethink on this.
Yeah, yeah, we do. Speaking of white men and podcasts, some white men made a podcast about another white man, Drisky. Mark Driscoll. Drisky fatigue setting in for you guys at all? Are we sick of him yet? I mean, just conceptually.
I mean, this one, I mean, to be fair, yeah, man, TBF, this is more about Mars Hill than just primarily about Drisky.
Yeah.
So it's the rise and fall of Mars Hill. So it, Drisky obviously is a central character, but they're looking at all the different elements that kind of went into that.
So you're high on this thing, baby. You're high on this Drisky Mars Hill podcast.
I don't know that I'm high on it, guys. Really? I got to be honest with you, man. It leaves kind of a I don't know if I'm going to enjoy this. I've heard a little bit of the two pods that have been released, and it's done really well. So when I say it's not my thing, it's not a slap against it as a pod. It's more of like, man, it's not a feel good program like what we're doing here. Boys.
So it's a
what I mean.
Yeah, I want to ask you guys about that. So it's kind of a weird genre deal in that. And keep in mind, I haven't listened to it, and I won't, due to it not being about football. But this strikes me as sort of like Christians dipping their toe into like the true crime, like podcast format. Kind of a lurid narrative, titillating, look at this car crash kind of thing. Is that sort of the vibe of it, Pipe?
A little bit. It's like that, except mixed with, some of those podcasts that are like, there's a podcast called like Business Wars, for example, that's like, Marvel versus DC Comics and Pepsi versus Coke. And so it sort of gives the backstories of these whole organizations and like the factors that led to their rise. So it's got a touch of that mixed with a touch of true crime. Like what went down that caused this kind of, streaking comet of a church to completely crash land? And it is well done in that they start off right at the beginning basically talking about the conflict of it, meaning like they're not here to like crap all over Driscoll as much as to say, how did a church that did so many people's lives were affected positively, transformed in the gospel, and so many people were hurt, how does that happen? How do we go from good to bad? How is this blended together? So it's more exploratory in that way than it is like we're going to uncover and resolve. And I, thus far in the first two episodes, Mike Cosper, who's the host and I think the guy who kind of spearheaded the whole thing, has done a really good job avoiding sort of a gossipy kind of thing. Like it's hearing from firsthand people. These are people who were there giving their experiences. So it's, I don't think it's quite as sort of a gossip bashing tabloidy. And it's a little bit more like a, think like an ESPN 30 for 30 about a team that should have been great and went bad kind of thing.
Yeah, right. It's like, think of it more documentary. I mean, in fact, that was the big thing that Cosper dealt with, was like, why are you, what good is it to, take a guy like Mark and continue to throw him under the bus? And he goes, no, that's not what we're trying to do at all. The larger point is how do we contribute to a culture that created a Mark Driscoll? And that is the question he's trying to answer in every episode. And by saying literally that we all have a piece of this, maybe not personally, in terms of Drisky, but just like how did this culture of mega churches and leaders that whose ability and charisma overshadow their character? Like we see this over and over and over again. And what place, what part do we all play in basically allowing these dudes to get to that place with no accountability? And then not only that, but kind of rah-rahing them on and saying, yeah, you go. And so his whole thing is like, what do we do, moving into the future to maybe, negate this from continuing to happen, Cosper is like, he's one of these dudes that sort of has grown up a little bit, his formative years probably in, the documentary culture, that a lot of millennials are really geeked out on. And so it's like that too. And he just really kind of knows his stuff when it comes to putting together something that's going to build and be compelling and also, kind of make sense to everybody that has even an inkling of what went down. You might enjoy it, Big T. I listened to a little bit of the second episode yesterday on our drive home from Louis, and it's really good. I wonder, because of where you were back in the late 2000s with some of this stuff, if you wouldn't be able to, you would hear it with some different ears.
Yeah, I feel like I interviewed Drisky for something kind of during his ascendancy or when he was famous the first time or whatever. I know I did, because I did it in a parking lot at a school that I was teaching at. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't like a huge Drisky fanboy, and I want to hear you guys on this. I want to hear your interactions with him. I remember thinking it was interesting that like the Christian publishing industry was like hanging their hat on somebody like that. Like that was my recollection of it. Like kind of being in the business myself for the first time, thinking like, huh, this is it's an interesting move. It's interesting space. He was kind of doing the like rah-rah be a man thing, which you can't do anymore. So that was interesting how that's aged badly over the course of like just 15 years. That's kind of my biggest observation of it, I guess. But I think I thought it was cool back when it was first happening. You know, it seemed there was a lot of talk, and again, we can't talk about this stuff anymore because 15 years have elapsed. But I remember back when he was like trending the first time, there was a lot. We were coming out of like the 90s, and we were coming out of this kind of like, you know, taupe and ficus tree, like feminization of mega churches. And then you had Drisky kind of like, you know, driving a Harley Davidson onto stage and, you know, juggling chainsaws, and everybody was kind of into it. It was just a different look. What about you guys? How did you interact with him like back then the first time?
Yeah, I think I was sort of his, generationally at least, I was his target audience, because he got big when I was like college and just post college, so 20 to 25 years old. And so I remember specific moments of like walking to work at Crossway Books. So this is maybe around the time that we actually published him.
I was going to say, what labels put him out and made him big? Was it Crossway?
Well, Crossway was the one that published his books. I don't think they made him big, but he got big at the same time. So he was kind of this, because it was like the internet and podcasting was kind of coming to fruition. YouTube videos were coming to, like, virality was a thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And then he came out with Vintage Jesus, which, like you noted, it kind of fell out of bounds in Christian publishing. You know, made people uncomfortable. It was a little bit crass, a little bit frat boyish. But I remember listening to specific sermons walking to work, and like his description of Jesus at the battle of, you know, the battle of Armageddon. You know, riding in on a horse with tattoos and the sword and the blood, and I was like, it had a profound effect on me, because like Jesus was boring to me. He was just a little bit like Swedish meets Fabio meets kind of boring white robe wearing children's book putz.
Right.
And so the Driscoll thing had a positive effect in that I was like, oh, there's more to Jesus than these lame old flannel graphs. Which is funny, because that was never taught to me. I just sort of absorbed it through, you know, evangelical Christian culture. Then I actually got to know him a little bit, because through working at Crossway, I was in sales and would go to these different conferences. And he was not a big enough speaker to be like hiding in green rooms at that point. So these are 1,000-person conferences and that kind of thing. Yeah. And because all of his key books were with Crossway, like I was kind of his... I was like the company rep. And so like I would go have meals with him or get drinks with him in the hotel bar afterwards. And there was one night after a conference in Pennsylvania where he and Keith Getty and myself, and then a couple guys who were with Mark and a couple guys who were with Keith, stayed up to like, we basically closed down the hotel bar.
Dude, it's like the Christian version of Entourage, what you're describing right there.
just kind of crazy. In retrospect, and what I realize now is I saw things then that if I heard them now at almost 40, I would go, that's problematic. Like, that's not, this isn't something that we should be hanging our, like, the weight of evangelical stardom on this. That's not a good idea. But at 25, I was like, this guy is so cool. Like, this is, he fell outside of all of the things that I didn't like about pastors. You know, boring, stuffy, whatever. I was like, no, he's fun. He's charismatic. He's brilliant. Mm-hmm. He's a good hang. Like, all of that. And none of which ultimately matters that much, I've come to realize. But at the time, I thought it was fantastic.
Interesting. Dude, can we do like 1 minute on green rooms? And then I've got a question for Big R. Boys, we're getting a green room in Texas. Did you notice that in the email?
I did. Mm. Did you guys make specific requests for
beverages? Well, dude, that was my question. I felt uncomfortable doing that. Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
But not like a rider kind of thing where it's like M&M with all the greens taken out or whatever. It was, I just said, yeah. I like these things. So kind of anything in that realm would be wonderful.
Dude,
thank you.
I did too, but then I did a paragraph like apologizing for making the request.
You're so Midwestern.
In true Midwest fashion. I'm like, it's okay if you can't do any of that. I mean, I can just sit out in the parking lot. I'm good out there, you know. Baby, did you put in your green room request?
Yeah, I unapologetically went with brown M&Ms only, miniature Twix bars unwrapped.
Slightly stacked, chilled.
You know. Stacked in like pyramid formation.
Exactly.
You know, slightly chilled, right?
Exactly.
And then, yes, you know, cans of a particular kind of soda that you can only buy in a place that obviously Piper just said really bores him, Sweden. Mm. Already cans opened. And yeah, so I went for the gusto, man. I kind of brought it back to my rock and roll days.
Have you ever been to Sweden?
I haven't.
I have.
I've been to Norway. I don't know if that counts.
No, that's close. That definitely counts. We got to get to Iceland, dude. Remember
well,
that?
Well, I mean, I think that's think that's the goal.
That
for
is
us.
The
Iceland
goal.
Is the goal.
Yeah, fame in Iceland. I mean,
fame in Iceland.
Not necessarily right. In that order, but speaking of fame, baby.
Can I give listeners? So we've teased this live event a couple times, and I think our listeners might actually be wondering if it's real. Listeners, it is real. We're waiting. We're working out details because it's part of a church event, and so they're driving. But it's going to be at First Baptist Church of Hearst, Texas, on I think August 28th. That's the Saturday.
So, Hearst is like Dallas area, right?
Yeah. So it's outside. Solid. Yeah, kind of near Irving, kind of near Arlington. So greater DFW area. So August 28th. In the evening, we will have more details on how to get tickets and all that. But again, they're plugging it in as part of a larger church event. So we're not the sole drivers on this one, but you know, save the date.
But we need to be plugging it though. Yeah.
We
the
do.
Date alone just to get everybody's travel plans in order for sure.
So, yeah, funny story.
That's the plan.
They were going to book us into the Cowboys stadium, but there was a conflict due to the Cowboys playing that weekend. So we're going to be at the Hearst First Baptist Church instead.
I mean,
but,
we decided to let the Cowboys do their.
I've seen some churches in Texas that are about as big as Cowboys Stadium, so I don't know that it's much of a loss. And actually, they're more comfortable. They have like theater style seating, so I think
exactly
I think we might
they're more opulent.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I love it. So, baby. Where were you at on the Drisky thing? Like, you're going to have to help me with the timeline. Yeah. Were you in ministry yet when Drisky started to pop, or were you still doing music?
Yeah, I was kind of in between. I was doing both.
Okay.
So I was already in ministry, was still doing music stuff.
Were you,
you
in
know,
A-Town?
Because No. This would have been back in SoCal still.
Gotcha.
When I got indoctrinated a little bit. But, yeah. You know, all I remember, you know, so for me, it was, I'm a little bit older than Pipe. So, you know, for me, I wasn't, you know, I'm the same age as Drisky.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. We're right around the same age. So I'll tell you what, man, I just got a kick out of that guy.
Yeah.
So to me, it wasn't that I thought he was cool because I kind of didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of just, I liked his humor.
Yeah.
I liked the way he preached in the sense that it was entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I was listening to other guys for theology. So at that point for me, it would have been R.C. Sproul. It would have been, you know, Pipes Pop, JP.
Yeah.
So I would have been going after those guys to take my deep dives. And I'm not saying I didn't learn anything from Drisky. I did. But when we were, you know, because you drive a lot in SoCal to get places and you're on the road a lot. So to be able to like, first off, to be able to click on his podcast or whatever it was called back then was kind of a newer thing.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool to be able to like drive an hour. And since the dude preached like an hour, it kind of helped like take up the time.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a new thing too. Like the dude preached for a long time and he managed to keep your interest going like the whole way through.
Yeah.
So you never finished a Drisky sermon feeling exhausted in the sense that it's like, oh man, he should have landed this plane like 25 minutes ago. It was more like he just kept going and going, and he kind of built and he would build and he would build.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of a, there was a little stand-up comedian kind of vibe with him that I enjoyed.
Oh,
I thought that was funny.
That was on purpose. Like he modeled himself
for sure,
after, do y'all remember Carlos Mencia? That he Driscoll specifically modeled himself after Mencia. Like he was the first guy to kind of bring in the screens on stage to kind of like the interaction with what's happening on the screen and that kind of stuff and the clips and like his speaking patterns, the way that he would like, you know, set up a joke and then do a punchline and then a follow-up joke and then he would keep going in it. Like he it was a stand-up special. It was like a weekly stand-up special.
I mean, it was, and you could, I mean, it was like blatant that he was, that was a pattern for him, right? What's so interesting about that, and again, if we want to draw like a parallel between like comedians, like, I don't know, man, like comedians that I like when I try to go to their earlier days, a lot of times you just kind of go, oh man, they just weren't as great. It hasn't aged very well. And I think on just that level alone, I'll just speak to it on that level. Yeah. Every once in a while when I hear a Driscoll clip of something he did back in like 05 or whenever that was, you know, you just kind of go, oh man, I was laughing at it then. I probably wouldn't be laughing at it now. Right. And I think that's what age and, you know, maturity does to you, you know, on some level. But, back in the day, you know, because again, I'm listening to a dude like R.C. Sproul, who, by the way, was kind of funny. He was kind of like one of my old uncles, you know, like kind of, you know, had a little bit of that old school sense of humor. Whereas Driscoll was just, he was raw and he just didn't care as much. He was real sharp. He was also smart. So he kind of was able to combine all those elements and he just was super compelling. And so I just thought he was fun.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the big thing for me. I didn't really go that much deeper with him other than, hey, did you hear that last Driscoll sermon? Yeah, did you hear when he said that thing? Yeah, that was really funny. And so it was more like that than, oh, man, I mean, did you hear the way he unpacked, you know, John chapter 3?
Right.
I mean, there was nothing like that about it for me personally.
But, yeah. Interesting. Can I ask you a bit of a foundational question, baby? And it harkens to something that you mentioned like early in that bit. Who do you think is cool? You mentioned
I had the same question.
Yeah.
All right, boys. I hear the passive aggressiveness coming in.
Now, baby, you're reading into that.
I'm not going to abide by it.
I want to talk about the passive aggressiveness and then tell us who you think is cool.
It's not passive aggressive, Ronnie. I want to know what it takes for me to be considered cool by you. This is aspirational, not passive aggressive.
I mean, so let me just break it down simply. Like, you guys are my friends. I like you a lot. Therefore, to me, you're cool.
Yeah.
You know? You know, Driscoll wearing a flannel shirt, a post-grungy flannel shirt and a choker just wasn't cool to me. You know? I mean, it had a hint of posiness to it. It just wasn't cool to me. And plus, I didn't know him. Yeah. You know? If I would have known him, maybe I would have thought he was, you know what I mean? I would have overlooked that.
Yeah.
But since I didn't know him, that's all I had facing me. But, you know, for like you guys, for example, you're cool because I like you and we're buds.
There's some history there.
And there's depth there. There's depth. Yeah.
That's encouraging. I like how you also duck Ted's question of who is cool.
Well, that's just such a subjective statement.
It is. But I think Piper and I were both intrigued by the fact that you went out of your way to indicate that you didn't think that Drisky was cool, which begs the question, who do you think is cool?
I was too old. I was too old.
Yeah, you know, I get that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We're the same age, so I'm not impressed by his image. You know, I don't know. Maybe if I would have been 20 years younger, it would have been a different thing. And that's not like elitist. It's just stage and age of life.
And that's the thing is like Driscoll was like a pastoral pop artist, you know, like he came out with these greatest hits kind of things. And it was like, oh, this is like summertime, big summertime release pop hit aimed at a specific subset. Like he was aiming at the 18 to 28 year old male who was kind of aimless. Like that was his 100%. Thing. And I fell squarely into it. And so aspects of what he did really worked for me for a while. Like it landed and guy, you know, and I think it landed even better for guys who had less of a foundation than I did, where he was introducing them to something totally different. Whereas guys who were the same age and older were like, man, he screams a lot. Why is he so mad? Yeah. what's his deal? Why doesn't he tuck his polo shirt in? You know,
What's so interesting. So I'm so glad you said that. So here's an interesting part about that, right? So the dudes that I hung out with, and again, I was already in ministry at that time. So the other pastors that I was hanging out with at the time that were my age, man, it was like one out of one out of five, like Doug Driscoll.
Mm-hmm.
It was like when I would say, hey, did you hear that Driscoll, sir? Or like, man, did you hear that thing he said that was really funny? Did you hear that outrageous thing that he's talking about or that he's doing? Most, and I mean this honestly, like most of the dudes that I knew that I was doing ministry with, like didn't dig him that were my age.
Yeah.
So it was almost more of an acquired taste if you were kind of tracking with him age wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Pipe's on point when he just said, yeah, but I mean, you know, that dude had 10, 15 years on me.
Yeah.
And so I was more impressionable at that time, you know? I think that is who he was going after. Because again, we were already at that age where it was like, well, I mean, I don't know.
Dude,
I can, you know.
Here's a theory. I want to hear you guys on this as pastors. You know, just hearing you guys talk about it and remembering the Drisky experience, maybe he was honestly just a better celebrity and a better conference speaker than he was a pastor. Like, it seems to me that he has succeeded mightily in filling arenas and selling books and kind of failed miserably at actually being a pastor. So I wonder if he's just not better equipped to be a famous guy. You know what I mean? And I mean, that's a category that, I don't know, didn't exist really like 30 years ago. So it's a fairly new category, but, I don't know. I wonder if he should stop trying to be a pastor and just lean wholeheartedly into being, you know, a celebrity.
Well, and I say this with all seriousness, although it's going to sound like a tongue-in-cheek, snarky statement. I think he has given up on being a pastor. He has a target market. He doesn't have a congregation in the same way. Like even the stories that came out recently that we were kind of yucking it up about with the security and whatever else, the private security. Like that is the behavior of a celebrity. You know, every person who any of us would, probably our listeners as well, would consider a great pastor exists in an entirely different dimension in terms of sermon preparation and how they're caring for their congregation and the consistency between home life and the public and all of this stuff. Like he punted pastoring forever ago. The church, I put church in quotes, is his platform. It's his market. It's, you know. And he's absolutely really good at being a compelling celebrity. And he's his jam. He's good at that. He's not a great writer. He's not a pastor. His church is, you know, it has the trappings of a church, but it, you know, because of all those things, it's not a healthy context for a church. And that should be saddening, not like a judgmental statement, as much as just an observation of he doesn't do the things that a pastor does. That's not what a pastor, like a pastor's job is not to be controversial and compelling. Nowhere in 1 Timothy do you see those things.
Yeah, I think what's hard about this is that there's no model for checking a person like that because everybody's making so much money off of him, you know, in that. Even in his quote unquote church, there are a lot of payrolls that depend on him. And then there are publishers, you know, suckling at the Drisky teat. And then there are all the promoters of events that make money off Drisky. You know what I mean? So it's like, everybody's vested. Everybody has a financial stake. So people are going to be really slow to say, hey, by the way, you know, don't become a whack job.
It's tough. You're describing though what it was. I mean, we wouldn't say it's like that today as much, right? I mean, that describes him more in his at the height of his
when he left Crossway, it was for money functionally. I think Crossway was kind of okay letting him go because they kind of saw some of the controversial trends. And he went to Tyndale, and that's when like Real Marriage came out, and that book was just it's a firebrand for the sake of being a firebrand. You know, and he came out with a few other books after that. But what he's capitalized on now is the fact that if you have a large enough audience market segment, you don't need publishers. You can sell yourself. You can sell direct to the public. And so their own seminars, their own stuff, you know, kind of working with a publisher for distribution, but he's essentially his own sales channel now, which is better in some ways because it means fewer people are caught up in the vortex of like, we're not crazy about this, but we're making enough money that we can't back out. But it also means there's just, like you said, there's no checks and balances to whatever, you know, whatever comes out of that sphere now. Like it just happens.
You know what's fascinating about that specifically, T? Remember mm-hmm. when we had that meeting with Zondo and the woman, I can't remember her name, but basically some acquisitions woman from Zondo, and we're chatting. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but I specifically, we talked about Driscoll a little bit. And this was pre all the, you know, this was pre the fall. Pre-fall. Yeah, and she said, you know what's interesting? She said, up until Real Marriage, none of his books have been like big sellers. Like, so in terms of publishing, he's never really had like a big hit.
Yeah.
They've all done okay, but not nearly as good as they should do given his celebrity. They haven't been in line with his celebrity.
Interesting.
And I thought that was so fascinating because, again, he had released books that people were like, oh, I love, you know, Vintage Jesus or this or that. But like she said, no, actually, when you look at the hard numbers, they haven't really done that well. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I wonder why that is.
His first two books were with Zondervan. Missional Church and Confessions of a Reformation Rev, I think was the name of it. Terrible name, by the way. Not that we know anything about poorly titled books.
correct.
But neither of those sold at all. Like they were junk sales, and you know, they got some residual sales as he got famous. Vintage Jesus was his first hit, but I mean, it was a modest hit, like probably between 50 and 100,000 first year. So you know, like that's not New York Times bestseller numbers, but that's
again numbers we would die for.
Like, well, sure,
I would. I mean, I would consider screaming at young men for a year to get sales like that.
Dude, I'm a parent of young men. I scream at young men all year.
And a football coach. What? Like, it really is your job.
Exactly. That's literally all I do. Where's my
money? Driscoll, Big T.
I really am, dude. If you could see the choker that I'm wearing now, you would indicate how uncool it is.
Yeah.
I would love to see how beautiful it is. Oh, I would indicate it, but I'd love to see it.
I can hear the chain on your wallet clinking from here. yeah.
Maybe like Sue in Swingers. He always had the chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's absolutely. That was kind of Driscoll's sales level with all of his books with Crossway. Like none of them exploded. I think Death by Love, his second one, did better because it was a better book for one thing. It was a little bit more kind of theologically thoughtful and a little bit less aggressive. But even then, like again, we're still talking that 50 to 100,000 first year kind of thing. So yeah, he didn't go crazy until the controversy about Real Marriage, and I think that was a Tyndale book. I can't remember; might have been Thomas Nelson. But
I thought that Doctrine book always did good. It seemed like a lot of people used that Doctrine book, though. I thought that one was kind of
But I mean, it's a lot in a niche context. Like it's you know, if 40% of a tiny niche use a book, you're at, you know, 30,000 in sales or whatever.
Yeah.
I would love to sell 30,000 of something, but yeah, he was not a publishing phenomenon the way that you know, he might be perceived from the outside because his name was bigger than his sales for sure.
Interesting.
I think after our book releases, we're going to wish that we could sell only 50,000 because of the places it's going to bring us. That's going to complicate our lives. Boys. Am I right?
Sure. Yeah. But,
I hear celebrity is very high pressure. So yeah, that sounds challenging.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Dude, how long till Cosby makes a documentary about a documentary pod about our pod?
We need to have a
sit down with him.
Crash and burn.
Yeah.
So one of us needs to blow up and then blow it up.
Can we get Cosby on the phone? Can we patch him in right now?
I mean, if we did that, if we were that kind of pod, sure.
Baby,
we're vehemently against that.
I have two questions for you. one, do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
I remember nothing about that pitch meeting with Zondo except the ride home. So we had like an hour between the restaurant and my house.
We had an unfortunate amount of time to debrief that meeting.
During which we spent that whole hour trying to like convince ourselves that it went really well. While knowing in our heart of hearts that we were never going to see dollar one out of Zondervan.
I mean, I think we thought we were the personality plus dudes.
All
I think
day
we
long.
Thought like, man, she, there was no, we didn't say anything we regretted.
That's right. Yeah.
But at the same time, it was like, oh, she was not even remotely interested in one word.
Dude, she forgot our names literally the minute she left that restaurant. and in fact, she's on her podcast this morning, like not remembering who we were.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. My second question is, Thinking back to like early 2000s, did you ever wear a choker? Did you ever like just experiment with it for a short time? And just tell us about your choker of life.
Dude, no.
No?
Of course not. No. Oh, my
that's
gosh.
That's as passionate
man.
As I've I ever mean, heard you be on anything.
Ronnie, that's...
I love this.
It's not a...
It's so lame, you guys. It's so lame. Choker is like what the after-school special actors wore to look like the bad guys. That's how lame it is. That's how dumb it was.
Yeah. You know?
Anyway.
There sorry. It is, hot take. Ronnie Martin, anti-choker.
What were you going to say, Pipe? Sorry.
I was just going to say, like... On the one hand, that's an entirely expected response because who would Ronnie Martin be if not bucking the trends of, you know, Abercrombie fashion? But on the other hand, everybody's seen images and videos of you with some eclectic styles. So blending in some, like, I don't know, there's everything's on the table. It seemed like.
Sure.
Oh, Pipe, what my fashion, I'm not saying that my fashion sense in its own right was any better. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And we got lots of videos and stuff to prove it. But it wasn't that.
It wasn't that. That's true. You know, that's fair. You were never like Blink 182 or something. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, Driscoll would have been more cool if he would have been like Blink 182. What were you going to say, T?
I think he tried to be like Blink 182 to some degree. It was.
I mean, he's yeah.
Yeah, it was. Right. It was a mixture of that and I don't know.
So
yeah, Pearl Jam, flannel.
I have one more Driscoll question for you guys.
Yeah.
So obviously this podcast that Cosper's doing is the retrospective kind of after total fallout. Like we kind of know what the extent of the damage is now. When I know neither of you guys were really in on him, you know, in terms of like, man, I love Driscoll. I was closer to that for several years. When were you out on Driscoll? When were you like, oh yeah, I'm not okay with this.
Interesting.
Oh,
question.
That's funny. That's an interesting question. I think I stopped. I think I had a couple of years of intermittently like listening to some of his pods, and more specifically, I kind of switched to listening to like his conference talks. So I stopped listening to like his pods because I'm not really much of a pod guy. And then I listened to more of his conference talks. And then I think I faded out of that pretty quick. So, I mean, it was a couple of years before the fall. I was kind of already out on him, not out in like a negative way. I'd moved on to other stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it was for me. But
yeah, I think when the whole podcast thing hit, I got in kind of like you, Big R. I got into listening to like Pipe's dad and Timmy K, and I had a few like regulars that I would go to, and I think I just liked their style more than Driskey's in terms of like being a good listen and, you know, being something that I wanted to listen to. So yeah, and I think again, like you, Big R, I was just a little old for the Driskey thing. I wasn't exactly the target demo, and that kind of made it a non-starter, but I could see why people resonated with it. Like Pipe's explanation of why he resonated with it, it makes 1,000% sense to me.
100%.
I just wasn't exactly having that experience. But
sure. And I think, you know, no, that's good. And I think, you know, there was, I don't know, this might be going too far, but like there is something to, if all I can remember about Driskey's like sermons and his talks is that they were entertaining. There's something about the lack of you know, enduring, you know, kind of content that was there. Again, not that he never said anything deep or, you know, really theologically, you know, significant. I think he did, you know, for sure. But I think it's kind of another discussion about like, if we dress things up in such a way, the only thing that becomes significant is the dressing.
People remember the style more than the substance.
Absolutely. 100%. And I think that's a little more of what we got with him, unfortunately, because he actually did say some profound things that caused you to think and go deeper, but that's not what you remember.
Dude, so here's a question to land on. Who's today's version of that? The person for whom we will maybe remember their style more than their substance.
That is a great question. Yeah. I'll tell you what, you know who could have been in danger of that and he made a pivot?
Who?
I think is Matty Chan.
Oh, 100%.
Oh.
Yeah, and I think he made a significant pivot. When you listen to Chan, I haven't heard him in years, frankly, but I've caught some stuff here and there over the last few years. And dude, he's not the guy he was 10 years ago. I mean, he's older, so he's a lot more mellow.
I think it was cancer. You know. I think it was his cancer that really turned, because he went from like that sort of aggressive fireball, angry, to like, I think he really took on a lot more of the like the actual pastoral kind of embodiment tone, shepherd aspects of things. And he's still a super engaging preacher, but not nearly the like scream at you. What did he call it? Like in one sermon, you know, he got on people for sending anonymous criticism, and he was basically like, you cowardly, insignificant zero kind of thing, which is a thing he would never say anymore.
Right.
Like there's been a maturing and a humbling.
That would be crazy to say that. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But like currently, your question though, to you is like current.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, I mean, Pipe, I don't know. What do you think? Because like, I think that overly aggressive, loud, sarcastic, snarky, I want to be kind of funny, but I'm just kind of jabbing at everybody the whole time.
Dude, we're kind of past that culturally.
Yeah, in our circles especially, nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, it was compelling fashion, and entertaining. You know? Now it's kind of exhausting and irritating. You hear that and you're like, I don't like
exactly.
this person.
Well, if anything, we've moved on to like demure to a fault, I think is more the tenor of the day.
Well, I think we're kind of between prominent preachers go like they're kind of generational, at least like let's say in our theological, you know, cut of orthodoxy, where there's kind of men by generation, you know, like you get John MacArthur and R.C. Sproul are kind of a generation. My dad came a little bit behind them, as did Tim Keller. You get Matt Chandler and Mark Driscoll, who are of a generation, although they obviously diverged, that, you know, they parted ways. We don't have any right now. It's the old guard is still there. There's not a like next firebrand. And I think we're very suspicious of celebrity at this point. Part of what this documentary podcast touches on is like, how the mega church has become a thing, and the celebrity driven church, I should say, not just big. Has become a thing that people are leery of, and for good reason, I think. So I don't know that there is somebody like that now, because if somebody did that, it wouldn't work in the same way that it used to, because we're in the cynical, the skeptical. You know, we've talked at length on the podcast about, you know, people who have walked away from the faith and deconstructed. A lot of that has to do with church failures and character failings amongst leaders and all that. So I think if somebody tried to do that now and like tried to ride their charisma, like they would just be kind of sneered at. Like we have a new Gen X in the church in terms of the sort of like, I don't trust the authority figure type of mentality. That still works in certain parts of the church though. Like, you know, Stephen Furtick is still doing that, and he has a massive church and sells books and whatever. Like that still works, just not in our cut of the church.
But I think I'm trying to think too, though, Pipe, of like a super like charismatic leader that's not angry and not shouting, but he really is known more for, like, his personality reigns high in sort of his delivery style. And so when you think about him, you think, man, his theology is really deep. It's great. But when I think about him, at least in equal part, I'm thinking about his delivery style as well. And I can't really, in our circles, at least, just talk about our circles, like nobody comes to mind, because I think there is that fear of like the personality or the charisma, like overwhelming the message. And look, I mean, I'm at a 0.0% for any of this, but like, even for me, when I tend to speak, I lead with, I find humor in things, and I sort of lead out that way a little bit. And I have to put a kibosh on a lot of that intentionally, because I don't just want to be up there, like just, you know, doing, you know, jabbing at everything. And again, I'm not like an angry preacher, but it can tend to like just kind of get off on rabbit trails in terms of like, this is the ridiculousness of the thing we're talking about. And I can get into that mode where you're kind of building, and you know, we all do it on the pod. And so I don't want my sermons and my talks to be like a version of some of the things we do on the pod, even though like personality wise, I have the tendency to lean into that. So I'm trying to think of somebody who just lets that go and lets that fly. I can't really think of anybody, to be honest. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Boys, do we are we doing a Patreon today?
If we can fit it in.
Yeah, we should probably close this one out. Yeah. It's been fun.
Yeah, not bad.
Boy, yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Let's rate it, man. I'll give it a 7. I'll give it a 7.
I'm gonna rate it on a summertime curve. Our episodes in June and July always suck. So I'm gonna give this like a solid 8.5 out of 10 on the summertime scale.
Whoa, easy, pal.
So Piper, you've noticed that we don't do our best work in the summer. That's fascinating.
Well, there's no conferences. Nobody's publishing interesting books. We ran off all the celebrity pastors. Nobody has deconstructed recently. Like, sports are
summer
boring. Everything's just boring, and we're tired, and we want to be on vacation. So, yeah,
dude, nobody
we don't
deconstructs
do
in the summer. That's interesting. Deconstruction
Everybody
is
saves their deconstruction for the winter.
Exactly. It's a November game.
I bet there's a seasonal disaffective disorder tied directly to deconstruction. It's all like February, March.
Doubt. It's February and I'm taking a philosophy class. I'm deconstructing. You know, look out, world.
Yeah, I mean, I hate look everything. Twitter. I may as well hate religion too, right?
Right, exactly. Oh, man. Boys, we've done what we always do on this program, doggone it, in that we have pimped Dwell. We're looking ahead to a new sponsor, and we've talked about Drisky for a long, long time.
Don't forget about our conf.
And, yeah, save and the date, conf, August 28th, Dallas-Fort Worth
August 28th, Dallas-Fort Worth area, Cowboys Stadium, or Hearst Baptist Church.
And whoever gets the
Whoever
bid,
returns
right?
our phone call first. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
I'm Don Hawkins, inviting you to be encouraged with my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You. To subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.